I see just the one. Well, there's two. Oh, thank you. Two items up for discussion. Okay, so the first item for discussion is the proposed changes to the revegetation success standards for reclaimed land. Randy, do you have any opening comments you want? We have Adam here, who's probably here for the next one, unless you are here for this one.
Was Zana there?
The scheduling.
Oh, you're here for scheduling.
Item, by the way.
Okay, yep. All right. It'll probably be a good 10, 15 minutes before we get to that, but okay. You're welcome to stay and listen. We have Zana and Guy who are here for the revegetation success standards discussion, and I'll let you kick it off if you would like, Randy. Otherwise, we can turn it over to them. I'm hoping they'll walk through it.
Yeah, I'm not going to say much about it because they are the experts, far more so than me. But I do just want to commend them. This has been a long, long, complicated process. And I really appreciate the diligence of our staff, people that aren't even with us anymore that started on this, as well as the team we have in place right now for pulling it all together and getting it finished up. And thank you so much. And go ahead and explain it.
Excellent. All right, Zana and Guy, thank you. I read your
memo. Don't be shy about patting yourselves on the back.
Yeah, it looks like it was a lot of work, and I know how important this, I mean, this is really where the rubber meets the road in your work. And so how you measure the effectiveness of reclamation kind of comes down to a lot of what we're looking at here. So I'm excited to hear about what you're proposing in terms of changes and talk through it.
I think, first of all, Guy was one of the leads.
Can you hear Zana, Randy? Is she loud enough?
Not very well.
Yeah, why don't you take that mic, and Guy can take the other mic, and then you guys don't have to share.
Okay. Guy was one of the leads on this project, along with Randy Kowalski. Who else was on it? Dean and Preston. Anybody that I missed?
Yeah, Randy Kowalski.
Okay, Randy. And so I'm going to let Guy, he was the expert, and I was a sideline, observing from the sidelines on this one.
Okay, very good.
Okay, well, the version of the guidelines right now in place are from 2003, and if you go back, we had the original version was from 1988, so it's been changed a number of times over the years, and actually we started working on this update in 2007, I believe. And part of that was just rule changes that we made regarding the years mining companies could collect data to demonstrate revegetation success. And so most of the changes here are for agriculture-related items such as cropland, native grassland, tame pasture land. There's some rule changes for woodlands and trees. Instead of requiring data from the last 2 years, our rules were changed to only require it for the final year. And so many of the updates are simply updating our document so that it's consistent with our administrative rules. That's part of it. For cropland, for example, instead of the last 2 years of the liability period, it's any 2 years after year six, okay? And that carries over also to native grassland and tame pasture land. The other major change really is updating our data with changes that the NRCS made. And a lot of that has to do with, for example, they used to categorize native grassland by range sites. They transferred over to ecological sites. So here again, that was a change we had to have to update to be concurrent with the NRCS baseline data that we use to establish our standards.
And what's the difference between an ecological site and the range sites?
There's really nothing. It's just a
term?
It's just a term.
Okay.
It's more than just a term, but it's it's a little more involved than that, I put it that way, but it's the same concept.
Okay.
And they updated like the expected production from these sites. So here again, we have to update our guidelines to be concurrent with that. For example, with the native grassland, we used to, the older version, we dive down into the actual soil mapping unit, and we're making a little bit of a change there, and we're going to range site or ecological site simply to be consistent with what the federal agencies have established. The same with the tame pasture land, they now go to pasture and hayland suitability groups, which was a change. So a lot of these changes are simply updating the terminology for the most part. And again, that has a lot of our standards are developed based on the soils and what NRCS establishes for productivity. And so, again, we're just updating to maintain and be current with the best technology currently available.
Guy, there's... Randy, do you mind if I ask questions? Did you want to go first?
No, go ahead.
Okay. One of the... in the memo, there's a line that says the diversity and seasonality standards are being revised to include a requirement that at least three native forbs be present on reclaimed lands initially seeded after December of 2017. How many are required currently?
Zero.
Oh, okay. All right. Go ahead, if there's other things you want to discuss.
No, I that's really the main point, is just updating two changes that were made by NRCS in the development of the productivity or our revegetation success standards. I mean, in a nutshell, that's it. And
do you feel that these changes make it are a higher standard?
No, it's in terms of no, it's the same thing. It's just a different terminology in a way.
Okay.
The only real change would have been native grassland, and where we went from the actual soil to a site. So you may have several soils that are loamy ecological sites. So we broadened it somewhat, and we've had to. In a table, we lay out what those sites are supposed to yield if that undisturbed native grassland is in excellent condition. So we worked with industry and we looked at it and tried to use some judgment and common sense on what would be the appropriate values, and that's what we've set, and I think it's fair. And
okay, so it's fair. What are the benefits of these changes? Like, why? I mean, it's been like 14 years in the making. Why did we do all this work? What's improved or what's better?
It's just keeping up with changes that NRCS has made regarding some of the baseline information we have. I mean, the reality is the NRCS has, you know, they have the soil survey that everybody uses in the counties. They establish estimated productivity indexes for different soils. So as they've made changes, we pretty much have to, since we use their data to establish our standard, a lot of this is keeping up with changes that they've made.
Okay, and the outcome will be what? What's
will
the benefit
be,
to
will
the
be
public?
Current and consistent with the information that you're going to find from NRCS right now, whether it's terminology and
and it will facilitate bond release.
Okay.
And so, for example,
I have to believe that because they're doing all these changes, that something is getting better. Like, I mean, right? There's more accurate data, so we're ultimately we're getting better at this. and more specific or more accurate, and so the outcomes are going to be better.
I don't know if that'd be correct. What it is NRCS, you know, the national organization, you know, every state in the union, they are our, you know, baseline agency for differences across state lines, and even on a national level, where a lot of their data is, whether it be the soils or the major land resource areas, they pull together to be more consistent between state lines and between counties. And so, you know, I'm not saying the older information was wrong, but as they have revised and modified it, we're doing the same to be consistent, since we use a lot of their base data to establish our standards.
Okay.
And our permits then will be consistent with what is in use right now for NRCS terminology.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of having the 15, 20-year-old terminology in it.
Yeah.
And in the case of cropland, for example, farming methods have changed a lot since 2003. And we used to primarily bond release based on wheat production.
Sure.
And we are allowing other crops because that's what's happening in the industry. So broadening
right.
that.
So it's reflecting kind of current agriculture practices.
Right.
I don't like government just driving change for the sake of change, so especially when it takes that much time. So that's why I'm asking all these questions, like, why are we doing it? I know you guys have to do it, but I want to know why NRCS is doing all this stuff so that then we have to do it and everybody all over the country is doing just churning around for no ultimate gain. But it sounds like there is.
One of the things with the ecological sites, for example, is it used to be real ag-based. And now they're opening up to define it from less of an ag base, if you will, and recognize wildlife and water quality, and there's a lot of other things that go into having land in good condition. So
broader scope,
yes.
Okay.
And Julie, maybe this doesn't really help as far as your concern that I share with you about why NRCS necessarily changes things, but as far as our need to follow, and I throw this out, it's been my assumption, and Guy and Zana can correct me if I'm wrong, one of the key things for us in keeping up with that is, if we do end up in litigation at some point where someone is unhappy with the decision we've made or something like that, and we're using different terminology than NRCS, it adds a lot of confusion and makes those kinds of situations all the more challenging.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, so now the process is, if we approve these, you send it out to industry, they have 30 days, and we see what kind of comments we get back. Do you anticipate getting much from industry and other parties?
I'm not sure what we will get back. We will send it to the complete list that we sent it to in 2018. On November 5th, I sent it for review to all the mines, just to get the process going and let people refresh what we did. But it will go out to the entire mailing list for each mine.
All right, and then after that, you'll make any.
We'll bring it back here.
Considerations
for adoption.
Okay. What if there's a lot of changes suggested? Then what?
I don't think we're going to see any with this round. We've heard from industry that they want some changes. For example, the woodland standard, but this round of change is really focused on cropland, native grassland, and tame pasture land for NRCS purposes, and tweaked it with some rule changes. But I think industry is saying, yeah, let's get this approved, and it might be back here in a few years with other changes, so.
Okay, all right. I don't have any other questions, I don't think.
Maybe just to address this item about the December 31st, 2017, where there's at least three native Forbes be present. I guess you brought that up, but, you know, we started this process with industry and the first version went out in November of 2016. And so that date was established from 2016. And so the question Randy had in an email is, you know, it's not fair to change the standard after land has been planted, for example. But so it would be most appropriate to change that to from here forward.
Like 2021, December 31st, 2021, because we're just entering into a new season for seeding here.
And the other thing is industry has the option to use earlier versions of our revegetation success standards document if the land was reclaimed at that time. So, you know, the older versions they can still use, but going forward, this would be, you know, plantings in 2022.
And we do have some applications and some of the mines want to use this new version.
Okay. And for any moving forward, they have to from the date that it's approved on. They can't, if they're just starting reclamation, they can't go back and use it. All right. I don't have any additional questions. Randy, are you good to go?
I'm good to go, yes.
So it doesn't, do we take a formal vote on this, Steve? Or how, it says they'd like it approved.
It's considered a policy change. And so our understanding was that you would, if there are no issues with this, we would send it out. And if we get no comments or address comments, then we would ask you to formally
approve it. Okay. Yeah. So I don't have any issues with this, and it doesn't sound like Randy does either. So
I do not.
Okay. So looks like you're good to go.
Okay.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good to hear from you. But Guy, you didn't win a box of M&Ms.
Excuse me?
If you had used the word environs, I could have given you a box of M&Ms.
You know, I was listening earlier, and I intended to do so.
You choked under pressure. Oh, all right. All righty, that's our first item. Next up, we have the 2021 year-end public contact report from Stacy. Thank you, Stacy.
All right, that time of the year again, and this report covers all of North Dakota's environs, so
Whoa,
I don't know if that works, but hopefully
your reward is coming.
Hopefully you guys got a copy of the report. Just a reminder that we did launch our new system January 2020, so this is the second report we've used with the new system. We have tweaked things throughout the couple of years that we're using it, but I think it's been working pretty good. Cheryl has put a lot of work into it, so if Cheryl's listening, thank you. And she is very good about changing things to make it easier to use. So, and that's also where your guys' monthly reports come out of that system too, so I think that's really nice for you guys to see that every month too and keep you up to date throughout the year. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the report, I'm going to go over the highlights and then you guys can ask questions. But the first page is the overall summary. It shows 5 years of data for each of the different jurisdictions. And if you look for 2021, the things that stuck out to me, so I think I'd point them out to you, are the increases in the electric and gas. When I look back at that, that is due to the Excel electric rate case and the MDU gas rate case. So there was a significant amount of public input submitted for those cases, specifically from the AARP members. Mm. So that's why you see those big increases in those two areas. So I thought I would point that out. Other than that, there wasn't anything that really stuck out to me in any of those categories. Some of the areas are just getting really good at using the system, which I thank everybody for doing. So when you see large numbers in like the auction and the weights and measures areas and stuff, a lot of it is just due to their licensing and people contacting them for help with licenses and renewals. And I think that's great that we're recording all that just so that we know when the public is asking us for help.
And okay. Stacy, those were the two that jumped out at me because it's not just a 1 year anomaly in 2021, but it's really a 2 year thing starting in 2020. And so those increased numbers in those two categories, the auctions and weights and measures, am I understanding you right? That's not really complaints. That's people knowing that they can contact us for assistance and such?
That's correct. This reflects all contacts from the public, not just complaints. So if they just call and ask for help with a renewal or a question about their license, then it would get recorded in there. So it's not complaints.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Stacy, on the electric and gas mm-hmm. categories, I'd be interested in knowing the percent increase year over year in issues, contacts on those areas. And I want that just to use as an indicator of, you know, there is a lot going on in those areas. There's a lot of changes being made. And we are hearing from the public on, at least in the last year, we certainly have. And I want to watch that moving forward to see.
So the percent of increase between each context. Year?
Yeah, year okay. over year from 2020 to 2021. Okay. Now I see that, you know, in 2019 there was a pretty high number for the electric, but the gas is definitely mm-hmm. a substantial increase. I want to just keep my eye okay. on that.
And one thing I can always do for you is I can pull just specifically public input too, which would be just for input on cases.
Sure.
And see how that has increased. So I can pull that however you want. But
yeah, I'd be interested in both.
Okay.
Just the total contacts and then the...
And then the public input.
Yeah.
Okay. I think I do... Yeah, in the news release that we do, I usually put a percentage of what percentage of these is public input. And I can't remember what that was in that mm-hmm. draft I put together, but that is kind of an interesting number to pull.
Yeah.
And just look at.
It is. But it's also, you know, the... There's been a lot of issues on the gas side just with costs increasing, and that's not necessarily tied to a case.
Right.
And so that's interesting piece.
Yep. I'll point that a little bit out on the next graphic.
Okay.
For you guys. So if you're ready to move to that one.
Sure.
The next one is the actual, so this is actual just informal complaints against the directly regulated companies that we watch out for. Once again, 5 years showing you. All of them were pretty much the same. As you can see, we did add in Dakota Natural Gas this year for the first time. I did get one complaint. They're a new gas company that we are regulating, so they are added in there. Xcel's complaints were up from last year, and when I looked, that was a combination of high natural gas bill complaints and disconnects. And if you'll remember in 2020, I believe for pretty much the whole year, they were not doing disconnects because of COVID. And I can't remember when they started them again, but that would be one of the reasons for the jump from 2020 to 2021 also. But then there was also high natural gas bill complaints that mm-hmm. got put in there.
I think that they started the fall of 2020, started disconnecting.
They might have been. I don't think it was a lot, though, because... Usually when winter hits, then they stop, even though they sure. don't have to, and then...
I see. Mm-hmm. So there might have been a delay in those till the next spring.
I think so, yeah.
All right.
On this chart, Stacy, do you have Great Plains Natural Gas and Wahpeton just lumped in with MDU, I presume?
Yeah, those would all be under MDU.
Okay.
I don't separate those out. Even though technically they are different companies, but
all right.
and I won't go through all of the next pages. This is the actual raw data. So if you guys are interested in scrolling through the first set, breaks them down by the jurisdiction, by the subject. And then if you go to the next set, it breaks it down by the company. So if you're interested in scrolling through and just seeing what each company had underneath them, you can do that. And then the last section is all of the referrals when you see all of the non-jurisdictional calls that we get and we refer off to other areas.
There's a lot of weights and measures. It's good to see. This is helpful just to help quantify the kind of daily workload that yeah. some of these areas are seeing, or you know, consistent inquiries from the public. It's really helpful to see what people are calling about and how often.
Yeah, weights and measures had 167, and it looks like most of them are related to just questions about meters, some complaints and scales, testing, registered service company questions, mm-hmm. payments questions, yeah, lots of stuff.
All right. Okay. Yeah. It looks like CenturyLink complaints are down.
They're steady from what we've seen. We haven't had any like problems specified to one area or anything going on lately, so
all right. Any other questions for you, Randy?
No, but I do always find it interesting the off-site referrals with such a generic name as the Public Service Commission.
Yeah, we get everything.
The wide variety of calls that we get, you know, things. One of them jumped out at me this time was a wheelchair van, and you know, it just shows the level of confusion that's out there among the public in many cases with where to turn for help on certain things.
Yeah.
So I don't know how government gets it better, but with our rather generic name, we do field a lot of calls on a lot of different topics.
Yeah, I think people see public service and it's generic enough that they think, well, they can help me.
Yeah, exactly.
They're public service.
Even down to the delivery service on their Peloton.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's why we put the public in the Public Service Commission.
Okay.
Right, Randy?
Absolutely.
Well, if you guys see anything later and you have any questions, let me know. We do always do a news release with this, so I'll send you guys out a draft that I have ready, and then we'll get that out sometime this week and go from there.
Sounds great. Thank you, Stacy, for putting this together and bringing it in front of us on a regular basis.
Okay. Madam Chair?
Yes.
We have one other piece of business, and that is Sheila's not in the office at the moment, so I'm asking that Randy pick somebody else.
Oh, Sheila's not here, Randy. Who could sign for you?
You'll have Pamela sign.
Okay. She is here. She's happy to do that by the smile on her face.
Thank you, Commissioners.
All right, that leaves the discussion matters complete. Then we move into scheduling. I'm looking at these. So the rulemaking stuff is probably, where's Jack? Is probably, there's a schedule for that, I'm thinking, in order to meet the deadline.
Yeah.
So that might be a good one to do first. But and Conrad, do you have a date in mind already? I think we've talked for the first one.
Commissioner Fedorchak and Commissioner Christman, when we discussed, actually I was working with Commissioner Fedorchak, we discussed it and we settled on May 11th is what we're looking at, because I know the month is filling up pretty quickly for May. I did notice that, Commissioner Crisman, you do have a slot blocked out on your schedule on May 11th, but potentially we could maybe do it 2 hours in the afternoon on that day. And I did reach out to the railroads that do participate, and they all do have availability on May 11th as well, if that works for the commission.
I'm pretty wide open on May 11th. Randy, you'll have to... let us know if that's an SBP conflict.
When did you say on the 11th, Conrad?
We could do it maybe, I guess, potentially in the afternoon. Would that work after your...
No, that's when I have League Night Research Council meeting.
When are you available on the 11th, Randy?
From 1:30 on. I'm available in the morning on the 11th.
Okay, we can do it.
Wait. I don't know why. One part of my phone here is showing that I'm on the 11th, and one part is 12:30.
Because you don't have enough on the 11th to take up the whole screen, maybe.
The 11th is a Wednesday?
Yes.
Correct.
Okay, so what I have is a meeting that they schedule from 8:30 to 2:30. This is SPP related. It's usually over by noon. They just, you know, schedule the extra time. And so on Wednesday the 11th, let's do the afternoon. But I don't know how long you planned on setting aside, Conrad, but the later the better, I guess, for me.
Okay. We typically schedule, I think last year we had an hour and a half, and I would recommend going to 2 hours because we did run over on that hour and a half a little bit by about 20 minutes. So sure. We schedule for 2 hours, and that should accommodate enough time for that.
And there are folks come from outside of Bismarck, so we don't want to go too late. Your meeting went to 12:30?
They usually end by noon, but it's scheduled for 2:30. Do you think 2 to 4 would be too late?
I think we could accommodate 2 to 4. It's kind of the business hours, and there's still flights out, and you know, potentially someone may fly in that morning then too. So,
sure.
Or even 1:30 to 3:30.
If that works for you, Commissioner, we can certainly schedule 1:30 to 3:30, if you're comfortable with that on your schedule.
I think so. If not, Victor can handle it.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
1:30 to 3:30 on the 11th for item number one.
Right. Sounds great. Thank you very much for your time.
Conrad.
Appreciate it. Yep.
All right. The hearing date for the gas rate increase. Patrick, do you have some dates to propose?
Looked like Jack had something there too, but the company and advocacy staff have been putting together their schedule of events or timeline for this case.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like they are proposing, that the hearing be in June. Specifically, I have June 1 through the 3rd, June 1 to 3. If that's available on commissioners' calendars, we'd like to block that out.
Mine is available. Looking here. Mark isn't until June 19th, so.
So that's a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Yep.
That works for me.
All right.
Okay, so then, since we do have that available, we can block it out, or we can actually do the notice for the hearing soon.
What I think we should wait as long as we can to do the notice for the hearing in order to coordinate with our third commissioner when they're on board.
Okay.
We still have plenty of time, right? I would tentatively hold those. I would put a hold on our calendars for those dates.
Yep.
But I think we should make sure that the new commissioner, that those work for him or her.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
But do post them on our calendars, please, so we don't do something else. No.
Yep. All right. And then finally, the rate making. Oh, wait, rulemaking.
So we will be sending out the notice of rulemaking actually on the 18th. And so we would have to have the hearing sometime after February 18th. We do have an informal on March 9th at 1:30, if we just like to schedule the rulemaking hearing for that date, unless there's a preference to have it earlier. There really isn't a time-sensitive nature to this rulemaking.
So the March 9th informal slot is what you're suggesting?
That's what I'd recommend right now. We do have a 1:30 on March 9th, and then that would move our comment period out to the 21st.
It's okay with me.
Sure. We can do that. All right.
And just to confirm, 1:30 works for
yep.
the commission? Okay.
Okay.
I don't believe we've ever had three dates for three different projects thrown out and all were accepted right away.
Easy peasy, but Adam just grabbed the microphone. I right. think he's adding right. one that's not on the list.
It always takes one to throw us off.
I right, know. Right.
So I'd like to maybe get some dates about Xcel Energy's transmission cost rider for an informal. Perhaps. Okay.
Did we talk about having one of those last week?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
And one was requested.
Okay.
So either the week of January 31st or possibly the week of February 7th.
Is there one on our calendar that we could piggyback on?
Not that I saw.
An informal connected to a meeting?
Not... Not that I see.
Adam, would you repeat for me what case are we talking about doing an informal on?
It's 21-396.
What is
yeah,
it?
And what is that?
That's the Xcel Energy's transmission cost rider.
Okay, and you want one the week of the 31st?
Yep.
Or
January 31st looks like at least from my perspective is clear. February 1st, 1 to 3 o'clock is the North Dakota Petroleum Conference. February 2nd is probably out based on both the commission meeting
yeah.
as well as the input session. However, the rest of that week looks okay.
Do you have a preference, Randy?
Between Monday or Wednesday?
Wednesday's out. Monday or Tuesday. Monday or Tuesday morning?
Well,
or Thursday after 10?
I think either Monday or Tuesday morning work for me.
All right, let's say Monday at 10, 31st at 10.
Well, see, Tuesday afternoon is the Petroleum Council, right?
Yeah.
Would there be good in just setting it for that morning? Because we know we're all there for that.
Sure.
Anyway.
That would work for me. So 10 o'clock on Tuesday morning? 10 or 11, if you want to do 11. I don't care.
Let's go a little earlier so we have some time to...
Okay.
last minute prep if there's something for the Petroleum Council. We haven't met with them in a long time. That should be an interesting one.
Yeah, let's say 9:30.
Okay. 9:30 on Tuesday?
Tuesday the 1st. Okay. Okay, and Pamela, you've got that case number?
Yep.
All righty. Okay, anything else that anybody needs to bring up for the good of the order? Seeing nothing, we're adjourned. Thanks, everybody. Thank you, Randy.
Thank you.